This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be reviewing all of the action from the weekend. It started on Friday night in Barnsley, and we have one more game tonight. It's in the Midlands. It's Stoke against West Brom. Stoke sacked Nathan Jones on Friday, looking for a new manager. Who will that be? And they play the side that have been knocked off the top but could return to the top of the table with a win tonight. That is West Brom. Our focus this afternoon will be on Huddersfield, Cardiff, Reading and Fulham. So remember, if you want to get in touch, share your views on your Championship club, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. So make sure you get in touch with us here on the Championship Fan Show. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon. Looking back at all of the Championship action then over the weekend, it started on Friday night. Barnsley taking on Bristol City. It ended Barnsley 2, Bristol City 2. Then on to the Saturday action. Wigan 1, Swansea 2. Blackburn 2, Sheffield Wednesday 1. A good result for Tony Mowbray's side there against informed Sheffield Wednesday. They've made a good start to life under Gary Monk. They take all 3 points from that game. Blackburn do have a bit of a defensive injury crisis at the moment, but they do get all 3 points there. One of the big results of the weekend came at Griffin Park. What a result for Danny Cowley. Brentford 0, Huddersfield 1. Carlin Grant with the only goal of the game, which gave Danny Cowley's men another win. They extend their unbeaten run to 7 games, 15 points now in 9 games under Danny Cowley, so he's certainly doing a good job there. Cardiff 4, Birmingham 2, a very sort of Neil Warnock game. But Cardiff do get all 3 points from that game. Joe Rules scoring a hat-trick for the home side. Derby 2, Middlesbrough 0 after a tough, few months really for Derby off the field with some of the incidents that have been going on. Important that they got back to matters on the field and they got a win on the weekend for Jonathan Woodgate. The pressure continues to ramp up on him as the Middlesbrough boss. Fulham 0, Hull 3. Big turn up for the books. Jarrod Bowen scoring twice. Well, what's new there? Jarrod Bowen scoring for Hull. If you see Hull City score a goal, you can be fairly sure on the assumption that Jarrod Bowen either scored it or got the assist. So a very good result for Grant McCann's side. Leeds 2, QPR 0. That was seen as one of the big games of the weekend. Leeds winning it at home. They move up to second, joint top with Preston. Swansea also on 28 points. QPR drop to ninth. Luton 1, Nottingham Forest 2. Obviously, Forest weren't involved last weekend. Their game was postponed due to a waterlogged pitch against Reading. But back in action and getting a win after a few poor results. They lost to Wigan and to Hull, surprisingly, but they did get the win away at Luton on the weekend. They moved back up into fifth. That's the Championship for you. You lose a couple of games, you go down about 9 places, and then suddenly you win a game and you move up about 5 places. Reading 2, Millwall 1. Gary Rowett experiencing his first defeat as the Millwall manager. For Reading, obviously Mark Bowen has only recently taken over as the head coach. He was the sporting director before sacking José Gomes and then taking the job himself. And there was a lot of negativity surrounding that appointment. We'll be getting the Reading perspective a little bit later in the hour. But it's been a good start for Mark Bowen. 2 wins, a draw and that postponed game. So good start to life for Reading and for Mark Bowen. Charlton 0, Preston 1. Another win for Preston, which currently leads them to sit top of the table. Paul Gallagher's second half penalty at the Valley, giving them all 3 points. And as we'll talk about in just a second, Alex Neil's name comes up a little bit more. And there's one more game to come in the Championship. It takes place tonight at the Bet365 Stadium. And It's a massive game for very different reasons. Obviously, for the away side West Brom, it's the opportunity to return to the top of the table. They've dropped down to fourth after wins for Preston, Leeds and Swansea on the weekend. But a win will take them 2 points clear at the top of the table. So they're continuing to go on their way. And also the news today that they've re-signed Gareth Barry on a deal until the end of the season. He was with them until the summer. He has been training with the club, returning from injury, but he has signed a deal until the end of the season. So some positive news, experience. Gareth Barry has signed until the end of the season at the Baggies. For the home side, things looking pretty bleak at the moment. As it stands, they are sat right at the bottom. Before the weekend, they were sat second bottom on goal difference. But after Barnsley's draw on Friday night against Bristol City, they have dropped down to the bottom, 8 points from their first 14 games. And ultimately, that poor form cost Nathan Jones just 6 wins in 38 games in charge of Stoke. An incredible statistic that Stoke had drawn more games 0-0 than Stoke had actually won a game under Nathan Jones. A pretty stunning and alarming statistic for Stoke fans. So Nathan Jones has gone, perhaps a little bit later than many would have anticipated, but he has gone, and so the question now emerges as to who will be the man to replace him. There have been a lot of names thrown into the mix. There's even been Tony Pulis, who's been reported to be potentially coming back to the Potters. Chris Hughton was the early favourite on Friday. We were speaking about it when the news broke on Friday afternoon here on the Championship Fan Show, and Chris Hughton's name was one of the names out there. Michael O'Neill as well, the Northern Ireland manager, was another that was rumoured to be of interest. And one other name to put into the mix is Alex Neil, or maybe not now. Over the weekend, it starts to emerge that Preston were considering, or perhaps more than just considering, reporting Stoke to the EFL for an illegal approach for Alex Neil. It's subsequently come out today that Stoke have announced that they will not be pursuing the interest in the Preston manager. It would seem strange that the manager of the club that are currently sat at the peak of the Championship would go right down to the bottom to take over a club like Stoke. Obviously, Alex Neil was approached last season by Stoke's opponents, actually tonight, West Brom, when they sacked Darren Moore, which was a very strange decision at that time when the Baggies were fourth place in the Championship. Alex Neil turned down that opportunity to go to West Brom, instead favouring remaining at Deepdale, and did a good job last season for Preston and continues to do a good job here. Obviously, Alex Neil was at Norwich and it didn't work out well there, but he has repaired his reputation, and perhaps his reputation is just going from strength to strength to strength, that all manner of Championship sides, no matter where they are on the table, are keen on luring him away from Deepdale. But it would have seemed very strange had Alex Neil been tempted away from a club that has sat top of the table to the side that is currently occupying the bottom place in the table. But it does seem Preston fans will be delighted to hear that Alex Neil won't be becoming the next Stoke manager. So obviously the question goes on as to who it will be. Would Chris Hughton, who was only last season in charge of a Premier League side, would he drop down right to the bottom of the Championship to take over at Stoke? I suppose it depends on how much money would be available to him in January, where the club believe they're going, because you buy into a project when you take over at a club. You look at the lot where you'd like to think that a manager comes in and looks at the long-term direction of a club, because if you can see that the club is on the slide, then there is very little motivation to go and join that club. But if you can see a club that, even if it's in a difficult patch, and Stoke are in a difficult patch to say the least, if you can see at least a path to a future and think this is exactly how we're going to go about it and this is what we're going to stick to, then that could be the sort of thing that someone like Chris Hughton could look at and think, actually, it's a good project. On Friday, we were discussing how Chris Hughton had done a similar thing at Brighton. So maybe he might look at the Stoke job, even though currently they're sat bottom, that actually things can turn around. And as we've seen in the Championship this season, all it can take is a little unbeaten run of only about three or four games and you can find yourself marching up the table. So even though things look pretty grim at the moment for Stoke, that's not to say that they can't work their way up. They are, though, 6 points from safety now. Luton are 21st on 14 points. Stoke bottom on eight. Barnsley in the penultimate position on 9 points. Middlesbrough have now slipped down into the relegation zone. And we've spoken to a few Middlesbrough guests over the last few weeks, and they've said how the fans, the board will remain patient with Jonathan Woodgate, but you just wonder how long that patience will run. Luton are just sat outside the relegation zone. Wigan and Reading as well. Reading and Huddersfield have really pulled themselves away now. Reading on 15 points in 19th, Huddersfield onto 16 points in 18th, when just 2 weeks ago they were in real trouble. Looking towards the top of the table, Preston are top after 15 games. They're on 28 points. So are Leeds and Swansea. They're also on 28. West Brom, as I mentioned, have that opportunity to go back to the top, 2 points clear if they win. They're on 27. Nottingham Forest, after a couple of bad results, they're up to fifth, obviously with a game in hand on 25 points. So in theory, with their game in hand at home against Reading, they would have the opportunity to go level with Preston, Leeds and Swansea. That game, though, won't be played for a few months to come. Bristol City occupy the final playoff position on 25. But as we've been talking about with the Championship, you look at Sheffield Wednesday in 7th on 24. Fulham, QPR both on 23. Charlton, Hull and Birmingham on 22. Brentford, Cardiff, Derby all on 21. So the gap between top and 15th is 7 points. Is that because the Championship is improving? Or, like the general consensus, is it that the overall quality of the Championship isn't there this season and there aren't that many good teams? As I said, one game in the Championship to round off the weekend tonight. It's at the Bet365. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. Stoke, bottom of the table, without a manager, host West Brom. Everyone will be looking at it and thinking that's a guaranteed West Brom win. What's it going to be? Stoke are going to win. I think that's the prediction, because no one will be thinking that Stoke can win this game. And lo and behold, the Championship this season will dictate that the complete opposite to what everyone expects will be the result. And Stoke will probably win 4-0 for all we know. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We're going to be talking Reading and Fulham late in the hour, but up next, we'll be talking all things Cardiff. Love Sport. This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number and share your view on your Championship club. We're going to be talking all things Cardiff now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Glenn Williams, Cardiff City correspondent at Wales Online. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Glenn. It was a 4-2 home win against Birmingham on the weekend. Strikes me as not a typical kind of Neil Warnock type of game. How did the game unfold? How did we get to a point where a Neil Warnock side scored four and conceded two?
Cheers for having me on, Kieran. Yeah, it was a strange one, to be honest. Look, Cardiff City needed a bounce back after what was a pretty dire defeat in the South Wales Derby. They were pretty feckless at the Liberty Stadium, and the fans quite rightly were expecting a response. And to be honest, the first 20 minutes that they didn't get it, Birmingham were brilliant, and Cardiff were just not at the races at all. They scored the first, Birmingham did, and I thought the floodgates were going to open. All told, they could have been 4-0 up inside 20 minutes, you know. So it was a curious start, and I thought something needed a change if Cardiff were going to get a foothold in the game. And then somehow out of nowhere, the referee awarded a fairly soft penalty for a tag on the shirt of Aidan Flint, and Joe Rawls stuck the first away from the penalty spot. He went on to score a hat-trick from there, and Curtis Nelson, who was making his full league debut, got his first goal as well. But for the first, like I said, 20-odd minutes, Cardiff were not in the game, and that little bit of fortune maybe to get that penalty just sort of kick-started them, and they were brilliant for the last 65 minutes or so.
You mentioned Cardiff's defeat a couple of weekends ago now against Swansea in the Derby, and Neil Warnock said that his players made too many bad decisions. They shot themselves in the foot. Do you think, performance-wise on the weekend, that the Cardiff fans got the reaction they were looking for, or were there still things that Warnock in particular will take out of that game thinking, we really need to improve in those certain areas?
Yeah, look, last 65 minutes, I think the fans can feel fairly happy with that performance. But the first 25 minutes was fairly terrible, probably one of the worst 25 minutes of football Cardiff have played at home all season. So immediately the fans didn't get what they wanted, but luckily they grew into the game. It's a strange one because Sean Morrison wasn't playing, so Curtis Nelson had to step in, and he did brilliantly, but again, a victim of the first 20 minutes. He looked a bit shaky as well. It only his first league start. So, the fans eventually got what they wanted, but I can imagine there was a few heads in hand after the first 20 minutes or so.
Let's talk about some of those centre-backs. Sean Morrison, the captain, is set to be out until at least the 23rd of November, so after this upcoming international break with a broken wrist. How big a miss was he yesterday? And in these games that he potentially is going to miss, how much is that going to detrimentally impact this Cardiff defence?
The one thing I'll say about Sean Morrison is that he's a great leader, you know, and Cardiff City need leaders. They lost the likes of Aaron Gunnison and Harry Arthur and people like that over the summer. So, and obviously Sol Bamba's not been playing all season until he came on Saturday. So they've been a little shorn of leaders, and Sean Morrison plays that role extremely well. So in terms of leadership, I think he's going to be a big loss. But in terms of defensive qualities, from what I saw of Curtis Nelson on Saturday, I think Cardiff are in good hands, at least for this Sunday's game against Bristol anyway. So a big loss in terms of leadership. But look, his presence is going to be around the changing room and things like that for the next couple of weeks. So, a big loss leadership-wise. But if Curtis Nelson steps up like he did last Saturday, I think they're in good hands.
As you mentioned there, the man that played at centre-back, his first start for Cardiff was Curtis Nelson. He's 26. How would you describe his style of play? Obviously, scoring a goal isn't a bad way to announce yourself in your first start. But in terms of his overall style as a centre-back, is he a modern type of centre-back? Is he the traditional, just boot it down the field and just does the basics? How would you describe him as a centre-back?
Yeah, he's a very confident lad, the club assure me. He hasn't had many chances this season, so he's been playing in the under-23s, and a few of the under-23s lads have been waxing lyrical about him. They think he's really got what it takes, and the top brass at Cardiff City believe he could be the Cardiff City centre-back for the next 10 years. Whether that proves to be the case or not is yet to be seen. But in terms of style of play, yeah, he is a bit more of a modern centre-back than what Cardiff City have currently got, with the likes of Morrison, who's decent on the ball, but Flint maybe not as much. I think Curtis Nelson certainly brings that modern edge to it. He does like to chest the ball down and play out, which isn't necessarily Cardiff's game plan all the time. They do like to lump the ball up every now and then, but it looked a lot more fluid when Curtis Nelson grew into the game and he was releasing wingers and bringing the ball out of defence and into midfield. And you know, that's only going to grow week on week, and hopefully that continues to be the case.
One man that came off the bench for Cardiff on the weekend was Sol Bamba. He played the final 5 or so minutes of the game back from injury. You just talked about Sean Morrison, the leadership that he provides. I'm sure that's kind of what Neil Warnock is keen to get back in this team is Bamba's experience, his know-how of playing at this level.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Look, Sol Bamba is the heartbeat of this football club, and it was great to see him come back on Saturday. He came on the 85th minute. The game was still fairly hanging in the balance, you know. Cardiff were down to 10 men at the time, and they needed a bit of leadership, and he came on the Canton stand, asked him to do the Ayatollah, and he did it, and it was just great. It was a standing ovation for him when he came on. It was just a really magical moment, really. And he said as much in his post-match interview on the club's TV channels. And he's tweeted as well to say just how much this football club means to him. So look, he's a very important personality in this football club. And the longer he is around and around the team, which he has been, but it is different when you're involved in the team rather than just being a presence in the dressing room. So hopefully that'll just give the Cardiff City boys a little bit of a boost over the next couple of weeks.
One of the negatives, though, from the game was the sending off of Danny Ward, who has been in good form, good goal-scoring form for Cardiff. Considering some of the players, forward players that left Cardiff over the summer, there's perhaps more of an emphasis on the players like him to contribute with goals. How big a miss is he going to be now that he is suspended?
Yeah, he is going to be a big miss because, as you said, he was in form. And in terms of Cardiff's forward players, that's been a bit of a rarity this season. So, look, that's going to be a big loss. But also, Robert Glatzel is out. Isaac Vassell is also out. So now Cardiff are down to a situation whereby they have to choose from Omar Bogle or Callum Patterson, maybe might start at the top, or even Gary Medine, the almost forgotten man who started the first game against Wigan in the defeat and hasn't been seen since. So he is a big loss, but also Warnock's got a bit of a selection headache to come up for Sunday's game. And it is a shame because Ward has been finding a bit of form, but he struggled with injuries in the promotion season as well. So, look, fingers crossed he comes back afterwards, after his suspension is finished and picks up where he left off.
It's been interesting to read some of Neil Warnock's comments since the Derby defeat to Swansea and talking about how the fans weren't very, very happy and that Saturday's game was all about giving a performance to pay something back to the fans. He also said how at times they did look a little bit nervous on the weekend. Do you think there is a growing pressure from the Cardiff fans that they should be doing much better than they are? And is that, well, I mean, from what Neil Warnock's saying, it's suggesting that is having a slightly negative impact on his players.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think at the start of the season, nobody would have thought that Cardiff City would be languishing in 14th place at this stage of the season. So I think there is an expectation from fans. And certainly in the first 20 minutes, I could buy the fact that they were nervous against Birmingham City. And yeah, look, I think like Warnock said after the Swansea City game, they have to earn back the Cardiff City supporters' trust after the start and also that Derby performance. So I can see why that would be playing into some of their play. But look, the pressure is it's a difficult one with pressure because a lot of knee-jerk reactions tend to happen in modern football, and especially from fans, and Derby Day defeats never help that. But I think Warnock, in my opinion, has got enough credit in the bank over the last 3 years to be afforded the opportunity to propel Cardiff up the table over the coming months.
And up next then, Glenn, is a game at home against Bristol City this coming weekend. Bristol City have made a pretty solid start to the season. They're sixth in the table on 25 points. Do you think, kind of going on from that point, that playing at home is perhaps slightly more difficult for Cardiff at the moment because of this perhaps nervousness around the fans at the moment, and how tough a game is that going to be on Sunday?
No, what I will say, I think the fans have been absolutely brilliant, actually. I think there might have been some rumblings of discontent sort of on social media and away from the ground, but at Cardiff City Stadium, I've got to be honest, the fans have been absolutely brilliant. They've been right behind Neil Warnock. They've been right behind the players. And also, in terms of playing at home, Cardiff are undefeated at home this season. They've been terrible away from home. So if this game was going to be played anywhere, they'd much prefer it to be at home because they seem like a different beast at home this season. And, you know, credit to the fans. That might be down to the fans. I think even if there is pressure building, you wouldn't have been able to tell on Saturday. They were singing their hearts out, to be fair to them. So it's a big game. Like you said, Bristol City have started really well, and it's a derby in this part of the world as well. So heading into the international break to beat your rivals who are above you in the table, can't do much more than that to alleviate the pressure.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Glenn. That was Glenn Williams, Cardiff City correspondent at Wales Online. Cardiff getting that 4-2 home win on the weekend against Birmingham feels like a big result for them. And as Glenn was saying there, Cardiff's home form hasn't been the problem, despite this indication from Warnock that maybe they're a little bit nervous on the weekend and the fans' pressure was on them a little bit. They are producing results at home, positive ones, but away from home, that's been their problem. But that's a tough game against Bristol City. Currently, the gap between the two sides is actually only 4 points, despite the fact there are eight positions between them. But a good test for Neil Warnock's side on Sunday, and as Glenn said, in that part of the world, seen as a bit of a derby game, that. So a big game on the weekend for Cardiff. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next then, we're going to be talking Fulham later in the hour, but coming up, we'll be talking all things Reading.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. So we want to hear from you this afternoon on your Championship club. We're going to be talking all things Reading now. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Paul Mann from Elm Park Royals. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Paul. There was a lot of negativity surrounding the appointment of Mark Bowen as the head coach, but the results, the positive results, keep coming. And a 2-1 home win last weekend against Millwall, thanks to goals from Jordan Obita and Sam Baldock, two good goals as well. It seems like there's a bit of positivity building around the Medeski Stadium.
Yeah, definitely. 7 points from his first three games. It feels like we may have slightly turned a corner. It's still very early days, but as you mentioned, there was so much negativity when he first came into the club. It's great to see that actually when you go into a game, we're actually enjoying it and the possibility of we might get a win. It's been quite a few years since that's been happening on a consistent basis.
What was the performance like then on the weekend? Because obviously sometimes a result can flatter to deceive. What was it like? Obviously Millwall won their first game under new manager Gary Rowett. What did you make of Reading's performance in that win?
I thought we were really good for the first 63 minutes, probably maybe just until after Liam Moore went off, our captain. And then that seemed to unsettle the team. We had plenty of chances. We obviously scored two really good goals from Obita and Baldock. We also hit the bar. We had another chance from Miazga header, which is a really good save from the Millwall goalie. Yeah, pretty convincing. Plenty of energy in the team. More than happy with that. If we keep that up, we're going to be fine.
As you mentioned there, few injury worries for Reading. Skipper Liam Moore and goalkeeper Raphael both struggling after picking up injuries in that victory over Millwall. How kind of worrying is it if those two are injured, that's not just a small niggle? How big a blow would those two injuries be?
I think definitely Raphael would be a bigger loss to the team if he was to be out for a period of time. The backup goalkeepers who we've seen play for us in the last year, and also Joel Virginia, we've had Sam Walker, neither of them have convinced. I think Virginia was a goalkeeper that causes quite a split in the Reading fans. He's very young, so he still has potential. But Walker, I wouldn't be comfortable seeing him. I think that'd be a big drop-off. With Liam Moore, we've got Blackett, and we've also got Tom McIntyre, who can come in. Maybe not quite as good, but nowhere near as much as a drop-off.
As I mentioned, when Mark Bowen was appointed as the head coach, obviously moving from the sporting director role into the head coach, to say there was a lot of negativity is probably an understatement. Over these few weeks, obviously results always are a way to a fan's hearts, and it's two wins and a draw with that postponed game as well in there. But in terms of on the field, the actual performances themselves, are you seeing things under Mark Bowen that were different to what you were seeing under José Gomes that make you think that actually this could be something that Reading can continue, not just simply a bounce from a new manager and then we'll die away?
Yeah, I think I am. I'm seeing that we've changed our style slightly. We've kind of made it far more simple at the back. An example being on Saturday against Millwall, we were almost out-Millwalled them with our effort and style. We have adapted. We're no longer making the mistakes at the back that we were making under Gomez and under Stam and Clement when we're doing too many passes in dangerous areas. Now we're just getting rid of the ball. And we're also getting key players like Oviedo and Swift further up the pitch into the opposition half. Previously, those two players who are really talented players, were too deep in our own half. So I'm seeing things that are being changed around by Mark Bowen. One thing that maybe is a little bit of a concern, I would say, was the substitutions that he made on Saturday, leaving us with only one striker up front, left us kind of camped in our own half. He almost admitted that he made a slight mistake there. But yeah, I'm seeing positive signs overall.
What was the main reason, would you say, why there wasn't exactly a huge amount of positivity surrounding his appointment? Was it the inexperience of being a number one, the fact that he's been assistant coach for example, Mark Hughes for many, many years and therefore hasn't had the number one experience at a championship club? Or was it more a case of him being the sporting director and then for some fans maybe just thinking, I want to become the centre of attention now by being the manager?
It was definitely the sporting director role. A lot of our fans think basically that he'd stabbed José Gomes in the back and taken his role and appointed himself. I think it's come out to be a lot more complicated than that. Now we know we're a little bit further down the road. We've heard Mark Bone speaking about it. I think it also was the fact that they expected a kind of a bigger name. So that goes back to the experience point that you made. I think we've seen with the owners, they're prepared to spend money on players. And we were a little surprised by Mark Bowen, but yeah, he seems to be convincing a few fans. I still think he's got quite a way to go with the majority still, though.
Now that you've obviously seen these first few games under Mark Bowen and you saw the end of José Gomes's reign, was the main reason why Gomes lost his job was because he wasn't getting enough out of this squad? Because there are some good players in this Reading team, and on the face of it, they shouldn't probably be where they are at the moment. And so was it a case of the fact that you felt like he as a manager wasn't getting the best out of his players? Or was there also an aspect of it thinking that the players are potentially down tools and thought, this isn't our man? Because we see it so often in modern day football. Once one of two players starts kind of this feeling that the manager's not for them, it can then spread around the dressing room.
Yeah, I think on the point you make about having players unhappy in the dressing room, Sam Baldock is a prime example of how it's changed around since Gomes has left the club. He was kind of put into isolation almost. He wasn't completely forced out of the squad like Gareth McCleary and Chris Gunter, but he's now come back into the team. He's got two goals. And I think if you kind of eliminate players like McCleary and Gunter from the squad, they're very senior players. And as a fan, I don't know whether that's caused disharmony, but if you're not getting the results and you're making these issues off the pitch, it's not helping. And I think he overcomplicated our play. I think as a team with the players, I think they need simple instructions. And it's shown with Mark Bowen that it's working. So long may it continue.
In the future, do you think that the Reading fans and also the Reading board, I suppose it may be a different answer for the two, will be more reluctant in the future to go for someone like a José Gomes? Because so going for someone abroad and obviously came from Portugal, not necessarily not a man or a name that the fans would necessarily heard a huge amount of and would know a huge amount about. Do you think that's therefore a decision, a managerial decision that they wouldn't make in the future because of this experience? Or do you think that they will learn from it and perhaps be a bit more meticulous in their appointments, but still maybe go along this sort of line at some point in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it is possible in the future. One thing that was a big part of when they appointed Mark Bowen is they wanted to make as little change as possible. Because you've still got some of José Gomes' kind of coaching staff there. Most of the big ones are gone, but there's still some of them at the club. So it's kind of, will they make that appointment of a foreign coach? Possibly. But I do think they are learning slowly, the owners. And if they've seen with the players that they've signed, the amount of time they've taken to sack managers. A lot of people thought they've gone too quickly with this one, but actually it seems to be turning out okay. So I would say at the moment the owners are learning about it as much as anyone else. So hopefully they're going to kind of keep the focus on the club on a day-to-day basis, because initially when they first took over, they left it with our chief executive, Ron Gorlick, and things got rather out of control. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen again.
Do you think one of the key things for Mark Bowen, but also I suppose the club as a whole, is to re-engage a little bit more with the fans? Because it's been quite clear over the last, well, for a number of months now, that some Reading fans aren't going as often to the Medeski, that the attendances are well down on what kind of the capacity is, what was being kind of achieved a few years ago. Do you think that's one of the big things? And if so, how do that the Reading board, that the hierarchy achieved that of establishing that relationship back with the fans?
I think it's just down to results, isn't it? He is really keen on getting the fans back on board. That's one thing that he's done really well, is everything he seems to be saying is kind of hitting the right note with the fans, I'm feeling. He's not kind of ducking any questions. He's admitted when he's made a mistake, maybe like the substitutions. He's also saying that, you know, the players are going to come back in. I would say that to get the fans back into the ground, it's just going to be goals and it's going to be games that we've won, get a consistent run. Hopefully we'll see that soon. I think it could happen. I'm kind of a little bit excited about the team because I think we've still got some decent players and we can move up the table.
Looking ahead then to the next game, Paul, the last game before the international break is at home again against Luton on Saturday. Reading have now gone above Luton in the table, a point above them, a couple of places above them. Obviously, the Championship this season has been a case of you think you know the result, will go for the complete opposite of it. But if we look at it in this sense, it should be a game that Reading should be targeting as all 3 points.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely have to try and win this game. I mean, Luton will obviously think it's a chance for them to win as well. But now we've finally managed to get 2 consecutive home wins. We'd be desperate to get a third one. If we get that going into the international break, Mark Burns had a fantastic start. 10 points from 12 would be brilliant. I don't think that would be the best start in over 25 years as a Reading manager. So you've got to say you would take that, and the owners will be very happy with that.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Paul. That was Paul Mann from Elm Park Royals. And I remember that Championship fan show on that day when Mark Burns was appointed, and to say that Reading fans were less than optimistic is the understatement of the century. I don't think I saw one positive comment, one person saying, I'm really looking forward to the future. Congratulations, Mark Burns. We're looking forward to you being our manager. It was literally the opposite. It was, we're going to get relegated. What on earth are we appointing this plonker for? And all sorts. So it was a lot of negativity. And so in one sense, you're kind of, as a neutral, kind of happy to see someone kind of turn things around. It is just a start, and obviously the game against Nottingham Forest was postponed, so it's just 3 games, 2 wins and a draw. There's still a long way to go, but from what Paul was saying there, the tactical part of the game has made a slight change. Perhaps simplifying things is the way to go, and realistically, with some of the players that Reading have at their disposal, you look at the likes of Lucas Joao, George Puskas, Ovier Ejaria, that they should be doing significantly better than they are. So it is just a short start for Mark Bowen. And one of the things he does have to deal with is he's not used to being a number one in the Championship. And it's a long old season. It's 46 games. And it's about maintaining a consistency, which this season pretty much no one has been able to do. But it does seem like a good story for Mark Bowen so far. When you get appointed, literally there isn't a Reading fan out there that was confident in your ability. And a few weeks later, fans are starting to change their tune. Not all fans will be saying that, but from what we heard from Paul there from Elm Park Royals, that the suggestion is maybe he's starting to turn a few fans and getting a few fans on side, which is so important. And as we talked about at the Mad Stad the last few years, there's been a decrease in the number of Reading fans turning up for games, and for Paul, the way of doing it is by just winning games. That's kind of as simple as it gets. If you start winning and start moving up the table, that's the best way of getting fans back to the stadium. If you want to have your view on that, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. One of the big surprises of the weekend, we talked a little bit about Huddersfield winning away at Brentford earlier in the hour. One of the other big shocks was also in London at Craven Cottage. Fulham took on Hull, and you're probably thinking Fulham were going to win easily. Nope, this is the Championship this season. It went completely the opposite way. 3-0. When I heard it, I thought, no, that can't be right. And then you hear it is correct, and you're thinking, how many goals did Jarrod Byrne score? Yep, 2. So we'll be getting the Fulham perspective next.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. As I mentioned a few moments ago, one of the big shocks of the Championship weekend came at Craven Cottage, where Fulham lost by 3-0 at home against Grant McCann's Hull. And to get the Fulham perspective now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jack Collins from the Fulhamish podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jack. I'm sure you were not particularly delighted with that result. What on earth went wrong for Fulham?
Basically everything from minute 1 through to minute 90. We lacked any sort of cohesion, any sort of attacking impetus. We defended badly. And from the moment that Joe Bryan got carried off after 90 seconds or whatever it was, it looked like it was going to be bleak. Fulham were bereft of ideas. Hull completely had our number. And it was just one of those days where nothing went our way.
Fulham had 75% possession. They had 8 shots, but only one of them on target. Hull seemingly was just very clinical when the chances came. 10 shots, 5 on target, 3 goals. One of the big things, I know it's the Premier League compared to the Championship, but one of the big things last season was Fulham's defensive problems. Are they still kind of those problems still lingering into this season, or is it kind of too simplistic to simply just blame the defensive problems for a loss like this?
We defended very badly at the weekend, which is, you know, it's as simple as that. It's very hard to excuse, you know, mistakes that we saw. Borsen came flying across for the first goal, missed his tackle on Grzycki, and from there, Maxime Le Marchand, who'd just come on a minute, well, 2 minutes beforehand, just seemed to completely lose his man. He took a little bit of a push in the back, but more innocuous, I think, than we'd liked it to be. And then basically didn't challenge the second ball, allowing them to score. And those defensive problems persisted all game. No one closed Jared Bowen down, allowed him to pick his spot for the second. And the third one was basically a complete shambles from everyone involved. So it is simplistic to suggest that it's just the defenders' fault. We lacked any sort of, you know, ability to penetrate in the final third. And for all of our possession, it didn't really look like we were going anywhere at any point of the weekend. But yeah, the defence were bad, and that needs to be addressed reasonably quickly.
One of the quotes that stands out from Scott Parker after the game was this: "We weren't where we needed to be. We've had defeats this year, but I felt we were flat today." When I hear that said in football, I sort of think that's the least you expect from any team, irrelevant of talent. You might get beaten by a better side, but at least you give it your all and you put everything into the game, even if ultimately the team you're playing against is simply better than you. And I mean, on Saturday, it seemed like Hull were more clinical. But is that alarming for you as a fan to hear the manager say that they're flat? I mean, how is there really an excuse for the Fulham players not being up for the game?
It wasn't so much that for me. I didn't watch the game and think, oh, nobody's putting any effort in. It was more that we were, you know, completely out of ideas. I think that was maybe, I mean, I don't know exactly what Scott was getting at, but it felt to me more like the kind of flatness of it was that we were just unable to create. We were out of ideas from start to finish. And every time we kind of got the ball and looked to take on or go around them, it sort of was played around the whole box until someone made a mistake and gave it away. You know, Mitrovic had one chance, the one shot on target. He spun the defender and sort of hit it straight at the goalkeeper. We missed a header just at the end of the first half at 1-0. Mitrovic missed a free header, headed it wide from a corner. And apart from that, I can't remember Fulham having a clear-cut chance, a clear-cut break. And I think that's the most worrying, that there was no way of breaking it down. Tom Kearney didn't have a particularly good game, but that's not really, you know, he's not going to have a brilliant game every week. And without Kearney on song, we looked like we had no other ideas. And that, I think, for me, was the biggest worry that, you know, we need to have, with the attacking potential in this squad, with the players like Cavallero, Knockhart, Bobby Reid, Mitrovic, someone's got to take games by the scruff of the neck and really start to create and be like, right, okay, Tom's not quite on it today. Someone else has got to step up and take that mantle, and nobody did. I think that was the most worrying thing for me.
It's now one win in the past five league games for Fulham. When we last spoke, Jack, when asked about kind of Scott Parker and whether there'll be a patience from fans and the board alike, you said how there was perhaps grumblings of discontent, perhaps certain kind of small parts of the fan base that were starting to doubt. Do you think now that those doubts are becoming bigger and there are more Fulham fans out there thinking or questioning whether Scott Parker is the right man to take the club forward?
I think only naturally, you know, the more a run like that goes on, the more people are going to say, especially with this squad, is he the right man to take it forward? I think maybe more worrying for Parker is the fact that the chairman and Tony Khan were there in attendance at the weekend. You know, last year we saw Fulham lose in the Premiership, I know, but to Bournemouth 3-0 at home on this exact same weekend, because it was the same weekend the Jaguars came over for the NFL. And they were in attendance. And the week after, we played a little bit better against Liverpool, but the axe had already swung on Slavisa Jokanovic. I don't think that will happen with Parker. I mean, I wouldn't completely rule it out, but I don't think that will happen because we are, as they say, 5 points off top right now, 7 if West Brom win tonight. But I think that there will be those grumblings until some sort of identity is created. And that, for me, remains the biggest thing. I don't know what this Fulham side are. I don't know how they play. I don't know what they're trying to do a lot of the time. It is very much possession for possession's sake at some point. And when you look at teams who like to have the ball and like to keep the ball, they are usually quite penetrative, and we just weren't at the weekend. And I think that's been building for some time. Obviously, you get a little bit of slack against the Middlesbrough game because we played with 10 men for 90 minutes, basically. But on the whole, we haven't created very much for a little while. And apart from the win against Luton, where Mitrovic dug us out of a hole, we didn't play very well there either. Since the last international break, we've really struggled to create and really struggled to take our chances. And that is the biggest worry. It's not the results as such, because this league is so tight that one run can propel you back right into the mix. I think it's the fact that Fulham don't seem to know what they are or what they're trying to do, and that's a worry.
We were talking a little bit earlier about some of the managers that are available, and the name that obviously springs to mind is Chris Hughton. In relation to Scott Parker, do you think that his continued availability, the fact that he's still not taken up a position somewhere, that potentially ramps up pressure, not just on Scott Parker at Fulham, but a few of the other Championship clubs, maybe a few that might be underperforming, might be below where they expected to be, that a manager like him being available at this moment in time ramps up the pressure on the managers currently in those positions?
I think so. And I think but maybe a Middlesbrough and a Stoke and those clubs, they're the teams that maybe will be looking at Hughton closest. I don't think Chris Hughton is the answer for Fulham. You know, we saw what happened last year when we took a positive, possession-hungry manager, sacked him, for right or for wrong. That's not really the point. We replaced him with a regressive manager who basically wanted to play defensively. And it went completely wrong for Fulham, because you can't have a squad which is based on attacking talent, based on wanting to have the ball, based on all of these things, and then throw a manager like Claudio Ranieri or indeed Chris Hughton into the mix, because I don't think he adds a new dynamic to that Fulham attack. I think if you're going to do that and you're going to swing the axe on Parker, which I don't think they will, I think you have to replace him with a progressive manager, someone who is going to look to be clever in possession, who's going to look to, you know, penetrate against teams, because if we do so, we have the attacking capability to beat pretty much anyone in this league. I wouldn't say every side in the division, but on balance, you'd be looking at this Fulham side as saying you could score against anyone. And I think that's what needs to be harnessed. Our attacking potential is almost limitless in this division, and therefore you need a coach who's going to bring that out, not someone who's going to be like, no, we need to just, you know, grind out wins. Fulham could be blowing teams apart. I think that's the main kind of worry for me.
And just finally then, Jack, Fulham down to eighth place. They're only a couple of points off the top six, away at Birmingham this weekend. I'm sure Fulham fans, as well as Scott Parker, will be demanding a reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's all about, it's as much about performance, I think, as it is about result. If we go there, we look really confused and we score a 90th minute header, having defended for our lives for 90 minutes. It will please people, but it won't be, you know, what we're looking for. What I really want is to see this squad start to kind of find its identity, find its location and what it wants to be. And then, you know, then go to Birmingham and try and play a style of football that suits the squad, that suits the players in it and gets the best out of them. And that for me will be the killer of what's good and bad about this weekend.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jack. That was Jack Collins from the Fulhamish podcast. Not a good performance, not a good day for Fulham fans, really. A 3-0 home loss against Hull. And as Jack said, everything went wrong. It doesn't matter what you point out, it went wrong. It wasn't a specific thing or a specific area that was the problem. It was pretty much everything that went wrong. Believes Chris Hughton isn't the answer at Fulham, and a lack of identity is the biggest concern, rather than, I suppose, the results, etc., that actually not knowing what Fulham are for Jack is their biggest problem at the moment. They're back in action on the weekend. They are away at Birmingham this Saturday. As I said, they've gone on this poor run, one win in past five league games, and yet they're only a couple of points off the top six. That's a Championship table for you this season, and all it takes is one win, and suddenly Fulham can find themselves into the top six. That's how the crazy world of the Championship works.
This is Love Sport.